when you start building things really big, by just by virtue of its scale, there comes like an emphasis on form. And I think a lot of folks making large scale work struggle with surface, in that if sometimes you make the surface too busy on a large form, it can like take away from its inherent emphasis on form. So the solution for a lot of people working at large scales is the mono surface, so like one color of white or blue or like one kind of big unifying just subtle texture and things. So when I'm working at scale, I'm thinking about making sure that, yeah, form is driving, and then in the back seat is color.
Welcome to the Color and Ceramics Podcast. I'm Bob Acton, and I'm really happy to introduce Matthew O'Reilly to the podcast. Matthew is a Canadian emerging artist working with figurative ceramics. Now working in residency in the United States, Matthew received first place for the U.S. National Council on Education for the Ceramic Arts Graduate Award of Excellence in 2021. Working between ceramics and sculpture, and using clay, metal, plaster, and a variety of color applications, his practice uses the sculpted figure as a launching pad for conversations about the human condition. He's particularly concerned with asking questions about our collective values through the framework of monuments and public statues. I had a great conversation with Matthew about form, size, its impact on the use of color, along with some tips he has for other artists to improve their work. I hope you enjoy the show.
Welcome to Color and Ceramics, the podcast for ceramic artists who want valuable ideas about using color from leading artists and world-class experts. Here's your host, Bob Acton, a sculptor and ceramic artist who's fascinated with color and how potters, sculptors, and artists use color in their work. Tune in as he talks with his guests about color, techniques, and the impact of color on people and art itself.
Thanks very much for joining us here today. Really appreciate you being coming on board with the Color and Ceramics podcast and having a conversation with us. I got oriented to your work at the Alberta Craft Gallery with your show. I think it was called Procession of the Self, and some of your work that you won an award with at NSICA, if I'm correct. So really love your work and excited about having you here today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Bob.
Yeah, that's
excited
awesome.
That.
Can you tell, maybe kind of get the audience oriented to a little bit about who you are? Can you tell us a little bit about your work and kind of what got you? I notice on your website you say you're an emerging artist, so maybe you could tell us a little bit about the emergence of Matthew towards today.
Yeah, I suppose, yeah, I came into this earth in Ontario, where I was born, and then went up to school in Thunder Bay for my undergrad in education and ceramics and painting. And my teacher there was Kasia Peach, was an amazing figurative ceramic artist. And that's kind of where I fell in love with the figure. And yeah, from there, I kind of had this big foot in the education and the ceramics world. And kind of leaned a bit more to the ceramics world, which kind of led me to kind of come out west and study with Zimmer Biner and Martina Lanton at the, I guess, ACAD then. Now it's Alberta University of the Arts, and that's kind of when where things really started happening for me. And yeah, it's kind of weird being 31 and emerging, but that all of the emerging artist things, they want you like to be practicing professionally between like 5 and 10 years. So you, anyway, it's kind of like a weird thing in the application ceramic world, but or in the arts more broadly. But yeah, now I'm down here in Montana to after a year in at Medalta doing a residency there. I came down here to do a 2-year residency, the Clay Studio Missoula, where yeah, just where I've just been making work and teaching and being in a studio assistant. But yeah, so I just kept on the figurative train and exploring all different types of surfaces and firing types and
Cool.
yeah.
Cool. So tell us a little bit about your work these days. What are you working on these days?
These days I'm making a lot of lamps. After that kind of Shed South exhibition I had in Duluth, yeah, just been experimenting with just making modular things and it's a major theme in my work was making kind of monumental figures or in public statuary. And then I was kind of thinking about kind of monuments like in the home or domestic monuments. So it kind of led me to like the traditional bus forms. So right now I've been working on doing traditional kind of tabletop busts and then kind of putting a lamp on them. I have a tentative show title called Shed Light, and it's going to be kind of a tie in a few things, but it'll be kind of th thinking about yeah, like shedding light on monuments in the home and kind of themes of masculinity and the themes that are kind of emerging in the work. There's kind of like a religious kind of iconography kind of emerging, as well as a bit of humor and just and weirdness. So yeah, just making all a lot of lamps right now after my recent obsession with clowns and antlers. So kind of I'm trying to take a break from that.
Cool. So pretty soon we'll see human figures with antlers and a clown face and a lamp on the top, so it'll be the creation of the idea, right? The light goes on.
Yeah, exactly. All those ideas will merge together soon. But yeah, I was really excited about like the idea of the enlightenment and like yeah, idea appear on these busts and then making some clever historical references or critiques or things like that. So yeah.
That's cool. That's cool. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing your work. That ought to be pretty exciting when we finally start seeing some of that stuff.
Yeah, it's coming down the pipeline. My exit show for the residency is in June. And then yeah, so it'll be up for a month down here in Missoula. So I get it all nicely photo docked and onto the online or into the online world. So
Yeah, excellent. That's great. Hey, you've talked about trying this and trying that and moving from one type of work to another. And I'm aware that people who are in the creative field, whether it's music or theater or ceramics or painting, people need to practice and they need to practice their technique to get it down. How do you practice color and surface design and your work? Like what kind of methods do you use to stay on top of that?
I guess a big part of it is teaching. So for me, like I get to teach a lot of really interesting like classes, beginner, intermediate, and like senior level classes. So for instance, right now I've been kind of teaching 10-week soda classes back to back, and I get to teach folks the techniques and then I get to observe all of their making and see all the results that come of it, and then make kind of my decisions based off of that. Yeah, among many other things. Like, of course, I have my own studio practice too that really embraces a process of discovery. So, like, my practice is I just kind of treat it like a job, and I'll show up for the 3 to 5 hours a day, depending on the where I'm at in the process, and then just start making things with my parameters around figuration. And then I guess when it comes to surface, I've been oscillating the past few years between kind of like really bright and colorful, and then just like knee deep in atmospheric soda and wood firing surfaces. So that's right now I'm in the kind of atmospheric space, but I'm trying to kind of merge the two. So what I've been doing is a lot of down firing. So for instance, I'll fire something in a cone 10 reduction onigama here, and then I'll bring it into the studio and put like those silky smooth Myalika glazes on it, fire it to 04, and then I'll put some luster on there, just really, yeah, just break a few of those, defile a few of those ceramic traditions around surface. But yeah, I just for the most part, I just kind of follow my curiosity, and usually that curiosity is guided by kind of cool technical things happening that are interesting, and yeah, that discovery within the studio. So
yeah, often I get interested in something through sometimes a mistake or something I did that I wasn't sure what I was doing, and then all of a sudden I've got a new surface. Is that kind of what you're saying happens with you?
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, like for instance, I'm not sure if you're familiar with Shigaraki, I believe it's called. It's like a coarse feldspar frit kind of little pebbles that you can make and add things. I mean, anyway, you wedge it into your clay, and they're supposed to melt out and do interesting things at particular temperatures, depending on what frits you use. And then, anyway, I made an 04 version that kind of pops and looks like zits, almost like, or pustules or zits on like the surface of my figures, which is really cool. But then I accidentally brought it to cone 10, or by accidentally, I mean, like, I intentionally brought it to cone 10, and then all of the little pustules kind of like melted out and made some really weird, grotesque surfaces, especially to have on like on the face and things, so like almost like little lesions of color. Yeah.
Yeah, it's cool. It's cool when that happens, isn't it? Because then you can go, I didn't expect that, but I'm going to use that sometime down the road.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, add it to the tool belt. And then I like making a bunch of those mistakes and different things, and then kind of making big combination pieces where you stick all the mistakes together, and maybe a new one will happen.
Yeah, cool. Hey, do you think that a color, the choice, like you said, you've used a wide range of kinds of colors and surface designs, from intense colors to more muted things. Do you think that influences the overall mood or the message of your ceramic work in any way?
Yeah, definitely. I guess one thing, dabbling in soda and wood firing, and of course there's exceptions to the rule, but for the most part, it kind of, those surfaces evoke like a historical lens, just because it, just the violence and the craziness of that firing process leaves you with like these just beautiful aged surfaces.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a really, pardon me, really interesting thing, because I guess for artists interested in creating like a dialogue with history and like in objects placed in time and things. So I've been really interested in that. And then when I do make more bright and colorful work, I stick to, like, for the most part, I've been sticking to a primary palette with like Myalikas and things. And I find like those bright poppy colors evoke the modern world sometimes, like like Mondrian things, but it kind of is like a visual language of the more present and now. And then, at least late, recently, I'm in my attempts to like merge them. I'm doing kind of low fire soda work, but I'm really excited about just the firing process alone. Kind of creates its own mood and dialogue, and there's quiet somberness maybe to like a lot of soda and wood fire, and some more bright, I don't know, interesting moods or excited moods with more colorful mid-range oxidation stuff or low fire stuff. So
I suppose then the surface that you're using or the firing method really then impacts the message that you're trying to get across in your work.
yeah, definitely the yeah, definitely for me, at least with my latest body of work called Shed Self, was a lot of those kind of trophy taxidermy figures on the wall, kind of big backings and or wood mounts and big antlers on them. And yeah, I kind of wanted those to be placed in time and in history. But then also, I like creating work that's, I think the word's anachronistic, so kind of like defies a linear timeline wherein the aged wood fired surface is saying this thing is old, this thing is, evokes that historical frame. But then I'll put like some more modern twists on things and hide a few little bright colors there, or a bolo tie, or these weird little figurines, or an LED backlighting, and different things like that, and really try and make something of the now, the then, and maybe the future. But
Very cool.
yeah.
Very cool. So how do you balance? So you're talking about a whole variety of different things here all at once, right? And so that's cool. So let me pull out a little bit of that. How do you balance the use of color with the elements of design, like form and texture? Like you've got a lot going on. So how, can you tell us a little bit how you work through that?
I guess I'm a bit of a maximalist, and probably it's coming out in the way I'm talking about the work, just kind of jumping from around. But yeah, in terms of how I balance the use of color, one big thing in consideration I have using color is scale. A big thing when you start building things really big, by just by virtue of its scale, there comes like an emphasis on form. And I think a lot of folks making large scale work struggle with surface, in that if sometimes you make the surface too busy on a large form, it can like take away from its inherent emphasis on form. So the solution for a lot of people working at large scales is kind of the mono surface, so like one color of white or blue, or like one kind of big unifying just subtle texture and things. So when I'm working at scale, I'm thinking about making sure that form is driving, and then in the back seat is color and some other things. And then, but that said, lately I've been doing a lot of smaller things and messing around and playing a lot more. But I guess I'm guide when it comes to color, I'm kind of guided by the in surface, I'm kind of guided by the materials I have at hand. And just like some jars of underglaze I bought 2, 3 years ago, and that happened to be, black, red, and yellow, and then for a Ronald McDonald sculpture I was working on at the time. But the yeah, and then and some other stains and things, and for me, what's really important for my practice in relationship to surface and design is kind of like an impreciousness. Like as soon as I start getting precious about material, it kind of changes like the trajectory of my studio practice, and I feel less comfortable making risks. So therein, I always use the materials at hand and what's kind of cheap. So I'll go into the studio slop bucket, reclaim bucket, and I'll make my slip out of that. And I'll throw some cobalt in that to get my blues, or some chrome in there to get my greens. So anyway, that allows, that's an interesting way for that, just the kind of economics and meaning to feel that not precious about work kind of impacts my surface and design choices, I guess.
Yeah. When you say not precious, does that mean for you that if you get into that preciousness, that kind of tightens you up a little bit, and to move the other way keeps you loose?
Yeah, exactly. Like, and I'm sure I'd probably benefit from tightening up and working on like kind of elaborate smaller things. But yeah, for me, I've always really enjoyed that kind of loose and gestural kind of California funk kind of weirdness. And there's kind of like, it's almost like I feel more embodied when I'm kind of quick and gestural, and I could, yeah, be lost in a flow state for 10 hours and not think about it. Where on the other hand, if I'm like working with precious materials and on these little intricate things, then I get kind of caught up in my head and I have a hard time staying focused and things. So I think it's just some little idiosyncrasy of my own practice and things.
That makes some sense. I was talking to Mish Filano. She's a potter sculptor in the UK. And so she was talking about how she uses her left hand to make gestural marks. She's right-handed, and she uses her left hand to make gestural marks in the clay and on the surface as a way to help keep her loose, let her kind of spirit come out, I guess, in a way, rather than the right hand, which can be kind of tight, and it was not something she was trying to achieve. So she's moved to the left hand to keep her that way, which in a way is kind of what you're talking about. Is it's a different method, but it's designed to get you into that same space.
Yeah. And I think like we were talking about earlier, it kind of, it leaves opportunities to make mistakes in the work, you know? Yeah. And to learn from those and for something new to emerge.
Yeah. Very cool. Now, what kind of challenges have you had as you've faced working with color and surface? And like, you've worked with a lot of different kinds of surfaces, right? From underglazes to sodas. And what kind of challenges have you faced as an artist?
With, I guess the biggest thing has always been getting the work to the kiln and just the studio layout. It seems like a little sillier to even think about, but when you're working at scale, like maneuvering through different doors, getting different jacks, getting a loading team, and for instance, when I moved to Missoula, my first studio space here was on the second floor up a staircase, and then all the kilns were downstairs. But that was a really exciting challenge for me to work and develop a more modular kind of system for building the work. When it comes to color and surface challenges, I guess I always leave myself out of cold surfaces. So I always when I have a background as a painter, so when it anyway, I with that in mind, I always feel pretty confident taking some big risks, and anyway, I made a lot of mistakes. I remember this one firing I did at the end of my undergrad with it was like a lava glaze full of sodium or silicon carbide. And I think I almost like destroyed the studio. It was only killed or big gas kiln, and it was a I think I destroyed some of my graduating classes' work. Just their work was just buried in lava glaze. And anyway, I think I really feel really confident on like in the ceramic chemistry department, and I feel like a lot of the risks I take are like informed and managed when it comes to surface now. Like I know what a cone 10 glaze is gonna do at 0.4, and I know what a how a, an 0.4 glaze is gonna flux and melt at cone 10, and for the most part.
Now, do you experiment with these kinds of things so that you might put a, I don't know, somebody was telling me the other day that they put a, make sure they have a few pieces in each kiln load that's an experiment. Do you take that approach, or are you more making a piece and then learning from a piece?
I think I'm more of a making and learning person. Yeah, I definitely take for granted all the firings happening around and the opportunity to put test tiles and things. But I think part of that for me comes from like the excitement of not knowing and like and maybe leaving room for that a bit of discovery and unknown in a work, and that's what kind of makes me excited about just soda and wood-fired surfaces is certainly there's you can manage those surfaces and depend which way I don't know you can try and predict flame path and you know how much ash or soda you're introducing and things like that, but there's always that element of risk and yeah, uncertainty, and then they always have cold surfaces to or down firing to save the day if things go terrible, which they do.
For sure. Sometimes they do, right? And so you're talking about, it sounds like having to, and it's true with ceramics, we need to manage so many different elements at the same time, right? You're talking about even moving your pieces, and you've got some pretty big pieces. How big were the your largest pieces that you were working with?
I guess the biggest pieces when fully assembled would be 8 or 9 feet tall. The work I was making at Madalta was like that. And then some of the more recent I've really scaled down as of recently. But some of the larger pieces are kind of 2 foot wall hanging pieces or 5 foot wall hanging pieces are. That one figure we were talking about earlier is a 6 footer modular piece.
So big pieces, right? So you're having to handle moving them down the stairs and figuring out how to make that all happen, let alone what kind of surface you're going to put on it. How do they work together? How do I get it down the stairs? What kind of surface do I put on it? So I find with ceramics, it seems like it's so complex compared to I used to do a little bit of woodworking, and so compared to woodworking, ceramics with its chemistry and temperatures and all that is complex. And you teach. What kind of advice would you give to ceramic, maybe people who are just emerging in the field and trying to pick a palette and pick their surfaces that they like? What kind of advice would you give them around taking a direction in this?
I think the biggest thing is the volume is volume, like or making volume. So if you want to kind of make and discover and learn and and start kind of narrowing in on a palette, you gotta try a bunch of different things, and then make 20 different things a week and for several years in a row, and keep firing them and keep tabs on the things you like. And then yeah, I think that's really good. And then I think there's something to be said for parameters. I think I've kind of just, I wouldn't say arbitrarily, but just recently just decided that I'm gonna stick to red, yellow, and blue for a new body of work. And that's partially due to the just different colors and stains that I have at hand, like we were talking about earlier. But also just kind of a need to have parameters. And because when I used to paint, I used to be like a really crazy, I'm gonna call it maybe psychedelic pour painting person. I remember my painting teacher was telling me that I need to, tame my palette, or at least think about it. So I think it's really smart to maybe just restrict one sculpture to just the blues, and one to the reds, and do one wild thing. But yeah, I think parameters are really key. And even if they're arbitrary or weird, I think we need them to kind of structure our making sometimes.
I guess that also allows us to be able to experiment with the work and the color, whatever we're working on, in a more predictable way, right? So if I'm going to use three colors as you described in your latest work, and you want to make a little iteration on that, that's easier to do than if you had 20 colors that you were working with.
And as we all know, in ceramics, like one glaze is completely different depending on brushed, sponge, sprayed, all these things. I think we have to really narrow in on just a few things, because there's so much you can do with a little.
Yeah,
And
absolutely.
and
Yeah.
20 glazes maybe is too much, but
Yeah.
so some people do that and have a
That.
great time. So
Yeah. Hey, do you have any books or suggestions of information that you think would be helpful to people in trying to get connected into this whole idea of color and surface? Where would you recommend somebody goes and does some reading?
oh my God, I've read a book and I've been listening
Well,
to
or
books.
podcasts or YouTube or a person where you might go and look at their work. Is there a direction that you might poke somebody towards?
Well, I think I really one of my favorite artists in terms of like color and scale and surface right now is, I think, Matt Waddell's work. And that's really my partially I'm just referencing him because he has the same first name as me, but also because he just does some really exciting things with big forms and finds interesting solutions to the age-old dilemma of scale and surface and form and surface, because that dilemma we were talking about earlier of large scale works having trouble with busy surfaces. So he finds really interesting solutions to that, and I think he's just started exhibiting more of his paintings and things, which is really interesting. So it's exciting to see like ceramic artists kind of branching out and
And
doing that kind of stuff.
you're back doing a little painting. I saw a couple of your posts that you had put up of some beautiful work, including a buffalo that intrigued me.
I'm back in it. My wife and I kind of got back into it together. And I used to when I was in Thunder Bay, I used to just paint big animals as like a little thing after undergrad to make some money while I was continuing my studies. And Yeah, I was just really excited about that, and then been excited about the AI kind of image generation stuff. As just like a as an animal painter, you're always looking for just nice high resolution reference images, and it's even better if they haven't been seen before, because I've painted some bears before that they've just seen on billboards and in other places all around, because everyone uses the same image. So messing around with the AI lately has been really interesting, because the AI makes these kind of little mistakes of an extra limb there and I don't know, some fur there that usually isn't there. So I'm really interested in that, and like maybe even bringing my some of my animal painting more into the conceptual realm of in kind of in dialogue with the kind of these weird new technologies emerging. So
Cool. So it might be a merging of your AI and paintings and ceramic work, and we'll see in a couple of years what comes out of that.
well, I'm gonna try and merge the two for this upcoming exhibition. And I think that one piece we were talking about on over email, the shed self piece with all the green little figures everywhere. He was kind of like the first iteration of trying to merge some of those new media, new technologies, wherein all the little green figures will disappear if you use a green screen filter. And I kind of that was kind of my idea for, those little guys. Kind of they're almost kind of like little personifications of technology that are always kind of pestering us, like our little phones or different gadgets, and making it difficult to be present. And then when you use the filter or whatever, they disappear, the personifications, but they're there.
Very cool ideas. Hey, thanks so much for being with us here today. I really appreciated the conversation.
Yeah, thanks, Bob. It was nice chatting. Nice
Absolutely.
finally meeting you.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been great. Thanks for your ideas. I think that many of these will be awesome for our listeners and urge them into different areas to experiment with in their practice as well.
Yeah, great. I hope it's inspiring for someone out there.
Cool. Thanks a lot. We'll connect in the next little while.
Sounds good.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Have a great day, Bob. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Color and Ceramics Podcast with Bob Acton and his guests. Please help others find the podcast by subscribing to this podcast wherever you find your podcasts, such as iTunes, Spotify, Amazon Music, YouTube, or other podcatchers. And don't forget to give us a review. We'll see you next time.